Hey, it's the Schilling Show weekdays from noon to two. Thank you so much for joining us. We know you have many listening choices on your radio dial, and I'm flattered that you've chosen to spend these hours right here, and this hour in particular with David Morata, who joins us every single month. You read him in the Sunday Now section, the editorial section of the daily newspaper. He's the president of Morata Wealth Management, online at moradaonmoney.com. David, welcome back to the Schilling Show. Always great to have you here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I was really astounded in a way. I mean, I almost put nothing past this administration, but the federal government just grabbing up the student loan program, what was it, a year or two ago, and saying, okay, we're doing this now. And I guess I'm first wondering, you know, where was their constitutional authority to just grab this business?
Yeah, it's amazing how many things have become government monopolies, and government has taken over more and more areas. And it's interesting. We put the word "big" before various things to say it's bad. Big pharma,
big business,
big oil. Yeah, big oil. And I even heard on NPR recently they were complaining about big computing, which they had an entire show on it, which was an interesting
story.
I've never heard that one before. You know, and conservatives complain about big government, but very, very rarely do you ever hear big education as a complaint. And yet education is a huge industry, and it is a business, and it is a business even if it's a public education, a public institution. Mm-hmm. So even the University of Virginia has to run as a business because they have to increase their pay and decrease their costs, and they want to increase their revenue. And there's a lot of factors going on there. It's just like any other business. It has stakeholders in it that's running it that way. And I wanted to start by saying that the reason why I wanted to talk about the topic today is federal student aid is probably one of the best things that government does. So so to me, it's a touchstone to say if there are problems with federal student aid, there are problems with most government programs. I used to teach computer science both at the community college level and the university level. I was a member of the National Education Association, and so I've been a teacher probably most of my life. Even now, I think I'm fall into the role of teacher more than anything else. I'm not against education. I think education is a great thing to do, but the way in which the government does education in its monopoly and in its funding ends up being, I think, more destructive than positive. And yet, I think there are positive things about it. It's just most people don't trace the unintended consequences of government actions to their negative components, and therefore they don't understand the true costs of a program.
Let's step back, and I'm not sure how aware you are of the history of student aid, but was there a time in this country when people were just expected, if you went to college and got an education, that you would maybe work two or maybe three or four or five jobs like my father-in-law did to get his PhD while he had several kids in the house? I mean, that was just the way people did it, and somehow they did.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly true that few people went to college, and when few people went to college, the few that went to college had great benefits in society.
Mm-hmm.
It's less so now because everyone has no excuse for not going to college, because you can actually get paid money to go to college, and you can get paid money for 4 years. You do end up with a lot of loans at the end, but find me a kid who's thinking 5 years ahead, and they're already on their way to being educated anyway. So it is true that only a few people went to college, and the people who did go to college often had some skin in the game. They would be working jobs. Usually, even the young adults today I see who have jobs and have skin in the game and are trying to get through without a lot of debt are just more serious students, and they get a lot more out of it. But more than that, even the loans that were given out weren't federal loans. They were loans by the college themselves.
Mm.
And now suddenly the college had an incentive to give loans to the right people to make sure that they were being educated in something that was going to actually have a pay at the end, that they were going to find a job at the end. Colleges today, we have completely taken it out so that colleges have no skin in the game. They can get free money from the federal government so long as this student picks their college. The student can end up getting a bad education, dropping out, failing out, or not finding a job when they're done, and the college does not get a default on the loan, so the college doesn't really care. And so we've completely eliminated all of the negative feedback on the money. And I think it was a better thing when a college said, we think that you're such a great candidate and we think that we're such a great college that we're willing to loan you the money on the basis of in 4 years you will get a degree from us and you will be so employable and you will make so much money that you will be glad to have gotten the education and be glad to pay us back.
You know, there's a lot of talk right now. In fact, I've got an author coming up who co-wrote a book with Bill Bennett. Yes, that Bill Bennett, entitled Is College Worth It? And there was this guy, I think he was from Facebook, maybe from Google, one of the entrepreneurs who said, I'm going to actually pay people to not go to college and see how they do. And it's interesting because people are starting to say maybe the emperor has no clothes here. And all of this is basically just about, you know, a money-making scheme. I look at the University of Virginia, and the faculty has an uprising to protect the president. And then the president, as soon as she's protected, says, hey, we have to go get raises for the faculty. And all of this seems very unseemly to me. So, you know, I guess the question is, are we still going to be operating off the same model that college is definitely worth it and a good investment?
Yeah, I wrote one of my articles was entitled, you know, College is Worth $1 million, based upon the idea that college is worth a lot. And I'm beginning to soften that a lot because it is it depends would be the answer I would give today. It depends, one, on the child going to college. There are some children. I think when college was more exclusive, it was definitely worth a lot. And I'm not sure if it was because only the best students were actually going to college and therefore they were going to succeed and make more than $1 million anyway, or whether it was that college was seen as more serious and you didn't go to college to major in. And I don't know what major to pick. I was both a philosophy major and an electrical engineering major, and so I have a foot in both camps. And I understand that there's a difference between seeing college as an education to learn to think and to write, and that's invaluable in any career you go into, or whether college has more vocational training and you actually end up at the end with a skill set that you can then begin to build upon in the workforce. I think both are valid reasons to go to college. But there are some people who will go to college and either not find themselves or not find their calling in life or not do something like that. And 4 years later, they have a degree. And I think they just missed out on 4 years of employment and building work skills. And now they're just 4 years behind the curve. So it is possible to make it through college and not actually get an education that will help you in life a whole lot. And federal student loans encourage that, because if you don't know what you want to do, well, you might as well go to college because you can postpone it for 4 years, get paid room, board, tuition, have a good time at school, not have to face real life, and not necessarily have to face into it. I have to say both my kids went to college, but we did have the discussions of whether or not college was actually going to enhance what they wanted to do with their lives or enhance their life in some other way by some kind of learning. And in each case, we looked at other alternatives, like could you go straight into business? And I have to say, we work with a lot of small business owners, and some of the most successful people in Charlottesville are probably running Subway sandwich shops. You know, there's a lot of different businesses where you can just go into business, and 4 years later, you can have built your business, and it can be worth more than a college education if you're smart.
977-1070 is the phone number. Our guest is David Murata. We're talking about federal student aid, is it working? And also the larger topic of, is college working? If you have thoughts on this, if you decided that, hey, my kids really need to go to school, and or perhaps my kids shouldn't be going to college, we'd love to hear from you. There's a line open right now at 977-1070. And Luke is standing by. You can get in line right now at 977-1070. When we get back on the other side, I want to talk about some of the ramifications that we haven't covered yet of government involvement, maybe some of the unintended consequences in this whole loan situation and the process here, and also how do we control the costs of a college education. That's all coming up when the Shilling Show returns after the break. 977-1070. With the finest hand-selected bumper music in the business, it is the Shilling Show. Thanks for joining us weekdays from noon to 2. Coming up in hour number 2, Ken Boyd will be here from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. Lots to talk about with Ken. We'll have open phones at the top of the hour, and right now we continue with David Murata. We're talking about federal student aid. Is it working? And also the value of college, I think, is part of this conversation. You know, one of the things that I've looked at, and when I finally thought about, you know, how incredibly expensive this college education is becoming in America, I started thinking about how there's really no incentive to control costs, and how if you just have a government that says no matter how much money it becomes, we're just going to keep throwing more money at it so that you can afford it, that the colleges essentially can do whatever they want. They can go on huge building campaigns and spend money extraneously, and the federal government's going to come in and bail it all out.
Yeah, and I think that's that is the problem. The difficulty is that education is frequently the answer to people's betterment in life, and I believe that 100%. But if you believe that education is always the answer, then there's no limit to what it will cost, because the colleges can continue to increase their prices. They have there's no negative feedback, and there's never anyone who's going to hesitate and ask the question, well, what are the alternatives? What if you can't go to college? What are the alternatives and what are the choices? So the difficulty that we have, I think, here in Charlottesville is that every town has its own gods of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And in Charlottesville, the gods of the city are letters after your name.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So education, you know, because the University of Virginia is here and because the University of Virginia is quite on, I mean, quite honestly, the University of Virginia is probably one of the best values for an Ivy League education you can get anywhere. It combines incredibly low costs comparatively and incredibly high education. So I have nothing but praise to say for the University of Virginia. But for some people, the University of Virginia is not the right choice. Piedmont is the right choice.
Mm-hmm.
And Piedmont, I've taken classes at Piedmont. The faculty out there is fantastic. I love the coursework out there. You can do your first 2 years at Piedmont, and then the University of Virginia has to accept you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot less expensive ways to go through college, and there's a lot of creative ideas. But so long as the government is willing to fund you no matter where you go and no matter who you are, there is no containment for costs.
There's another issue here that concerns me over the government getting involved in these loans, and it is the ability of the government to buy votes. And the people who are in power can say, well, and I saw this happening in the Senate race last year between George Allen and Tim Kaine, where they were both basically saying, hey, I'm the guy who's going to give you more of other people's money in order that you can go to school. But if the government's giving the loans, you know, all of a sudden they could say, well, gosh, vote for us and we'll forgive the loans, or we'll give you a reduced rate on the loan or something like that. It gives them a lot of power to wield over voters.
Yeah, the government monopoly is really about centralized control, and it's really about a form of control and therefore a form of compliance on anything they want. There are very few universities in the United States that do not take federal money.
Mm-hmm.
Hillsdale being the most famous of them, and I think there's one other. And they are the only ones who are allowed to say, we will not do what it takes to comply with taking federal money. Every other educational institution, if they put a requirement on taking loans, they have to comply. They have absolutely no choice. And so they can do all kinds of different control of forcing institutions to do this or to do that or something. And those are all subject to government manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the supply and demand of whether or not we want that done. It's not, do we want to send our kids to a college that's going to do that? It is, they have to do that because that's where the money is for federal loans.
977-1070 is the phone number. Comments or questions for David Murata. We'd love to hear from you at 977-1070. There's also a part of this that I don't think gets enough play and enough discussion and enough consideration, and that is the fact that we're telling people, you know, that debt is bad and we shouldn't have a lot of debt, and yet we're graduating kids with huge nooses, I'll call it, of debt around their necks. Certainly not a good way to start out life.
Yeah, the average debt, I think, is $25,000 is average.
Ouch.
And
ouch.
And graduating with $25,000 when your first pay is liable to be not a whole lot more than that, it makes it very difficult to pay that back. And as we know in the wealth management world, money makes money, and it's not timing the markets, it's time in the markets. So if you graduate from high school and you go and you get a job and you start saving 15% of your net worth, in 7 years, you're better off than the person who starts and saves for the rest of their life. So those first 7 years will end up doubling the amount that you'll have in life. And if four of them are spent in college and another three are spent trying to pay back your student loans, then all of a sudden you've postponed your savings for 7 years. You're liable to have half the amount of money. That could be the entire $1 million benefit from college right there that gets evaporated. So yeah, debt is bad. Just like money makes money, debt makes debt, and you end up paying a lot more back. And the student loans are not too bad a rate, but they're not too great a rate either now. They've actually increased the rate. And so what's much more common is either defaults or I've got to go do this government thing to get it repaid back. And the government, you know, services sometimes that you need to go do are just ways for government, you know, to enslave another labor here or there. And they're not really all that much societal good at times. It just solves a government problem.
977-1070 is the phone number if you have questions or comments for David Murata. We have a line open for you right now. Let us say hello to Leon. That's a familiar name on this show. Hey, Leon.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. It's nice to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Go right ahead.
I have a question. Yeah, I have a question for David. How big does the school's endowment have to be before they stop requiring or giving loans? For instance, Princeton, I think their endowment is like $10 billion, and there's no more loans. If you need financial aid, either scholarships, grants, or so forth, Virginia's got $5 or $6 billion. So how big does their endowment have to be where the school says, okay, no more loans for our students?
Yeah, Leon, that's a great question. Just to be clear, there's no federal requirement that you stop giving loans. So Princeton has made the decision themselves that they're going to take a high road and they're going to only give loans to people they think should be coming to Princeton, or they're going to have no loans and just fund it, knowing that the gratitude that of a Princeton grad will end up giving more money back to their alma mater and ultimately pay back the loans in that format. But Princeton could only accept, I mean, Princeton is exclusive enough, they could only accept people who could pay full tuition too. So it's not a monetary decision on Princeton's part. It's a perception decision that Princeton says, we want to do this because we think it will have a better image for ourselves. Or you could say they're taking the moral high ground. I would argue that the moral high ground and the perception are probably both the same. And you shouldn't look at one or the other, but it makes economic sense and it makes moral sense. And so they've decided to do that. Any college could try to contain their costs enough to be able to give loans to students who ultimately could pay it back in the form of donations to the school. So I don't think it's the size of the endowment that would recommend it, because an endowment can be used to fund chairs, fund faculty, fund building projects, or fund tuition, and any of those are acceptable. And so you could have an endowment that was incredibly large and still take student or take federal funding because you want the extra money, because you want to use it for other things. So but you're right, there are lots of ways to do this, and there's lots of ways for students to go to school without federal funding, even to the point of private funding, which is what we had up until federal funding. But I like the idea best that the person who pays for something is the same person who decides if that's a good idea and who's the same person who benefits from that student coming to that school. And if you do that, it's the school itself who should decide. They're the ones who should pay for the student to come. They're the ones who will benefit from the student being part of their student body and their alumni. And they're the ones who should decide whether or not that money gets put out. Because then all the incentives are aligned the same, so that the schools are the ones who are controlling their own destiny. And they don't have to do it by complying with a bunch of federal rules.
Leon, thanks so much for the call. And that does leave a line open for you at 977-1070. Let's go to the break. And when we return with David Murata, I want to talk about correlation of education spending and economic growth. Have you seen those little stickers about education is good for business? Is that really true? The more money we spend on education, the better business will be here in Albemarle County. We'll find out in just a moment on The Shilling Show. Our final segment for this hour here on The Shilling Show, David Murata is talking about the federal student aid. Is it working? Is this the right system? And you had mentioned off the air about the FAFSA form. Let's talk about what that form is and why it is problematic.
Yeah, the students who are applying for Pell Grants are compelled to complete it. Anyone who's applying for federal student loans, and all of the colleges end up using that to administer their tuition discounts or whatever other incentives they're offering. It's got over 100 questions on it, and they ask a zillion things about finances. What we found interesting is if we have any parents who are clients of ours doing financial planning, one of our touchstones is, are you filling that form out for your kids, or do you have any intention to? Because there are things that will change the numbers on that, not because their financial situation has changed, but just because the tax code is so convoluted, and therefore disqualify their kids for all kinds of discounts, and you have to take that into account for financial planning. So it basically means you don't want to do anything in terms of wealth management that will change your AGI, even if it's the right thing if your kids aren't in school, because of all these questions and federal guidelines, and because they are because these loans are entitlements and not there's no discretion behind it. It means they have no discretion to be able to bend the rules. And so, for example, if you do a Roth conversion or anything that increases your AGI, if you sell a house in California or a business and you have any capital gains because of it, any of that will end up triggering changes on these questions, which will then make you ineligible to receive any of the benefits. And so it's sort of yet another way that there's unintended consequences and the loss of wealth management that comes from not being able to do some of these is sometimes significant and tens of thousands of dollars, and there might be losing tens of thousands of dollars in student aid. And so you're not really sure which one you're supposed to do because all of a sudden there's a choice. We generally just postpone it because it's better not to mess it up, and you don't know how it's going to mess it up. Mm. So we try not to do anything when a client has that.
Let's talk about the lack of market competition in interest rates. I mean, if the government has a monopoly on student loans and there's not people competing, I mean, we're really talking about a completely artificial interest rate just because that's what they said they wanted to do.
Yeah, it's just like the Fed is able to keep interest rates down by their quantitative easing and things like that. They're able to manipulate the student loan market and make it whatever they want. And of course, when you're able to make it whatever you want, then people vote one way or the other, and you get into all of the political process. It's always best when supply and demand determines the pricing for everything. So if you make the pricing for college education really, really cheap, you're robbing the capital markets somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe you have less investment in business, maybe you have less investment in employment, but you have less investment somewhere because the money has to flow somewhere. Or you're just printing money, in which case you're just making money worth less, and then you're affecting the entire capital markets. So most of the time, things like this, when you look at just the effect of one thing like student loans, it's relatively small, and you think, okay, it's not that bad. But when you look at it in total of manipulating all of the capital markets, then it begins to become very significant. And every little bit helps or hurts the capital market. So you think, well, I'm only taking, tens of millions of dollars out of the capital markets. And you have no idea what those tens of millions of dollars would have done in the capital markets or what it would have funded. And so most of economics is not discounting the graveyard of things that didn't happen because you chose the path that you chose. It's the lost opportunity costs. And those are not visible. Those are not people who are obviously have been unemployed because you couldn't hire them in a business. They just never got a job in the first place. And so they had to take a much lesser paying job.
Mm-hmm.
And those unintended consequences are the things that I think conservatives are better at thinking about than liberals are, because liberals have great hearts, and they don't have very deep thought about the unintended consequences. And I think conservatives have great hearts, and they just have deeper thought about what the unintended consequences are. And so I don't fault anyone on their motives, which is to liberals, that almost concedes the argument, because liberals think everything is about motives, and they ascribe these terrible motives to conservatives that we just want to see lots of stupid people who can't go to college. And that's just not the case. We just want to see the balance of a good does have a price, and is the price worth being paid? Or is it too high a price to be paid?
Let's go back to the phones and say hello to Jordan. And there's also a line open right now, real quick, if you want to talk to David Murata, 977-1070. Hey, Jordan, welcome to the Shilling Show. We lost Jordan. Oh, Jordan, call us back. We were waiting for your question. All right, I wanted to get into this issue of the correlation of education spending and economic growth, because I hear this argument being thrown out to the Board of Supervisors locally is, hey, if we invest in education, that's great for business here in Albemarle County. Has that been proven?
You know, it's interesting. Every school tries to claim that, and the online diploma mills are probably the worst offenders of saying, here are these vocations, you can make incredible money at them,
yeah,
and it's all paid for by the federal government, and they'll actually advertise it that way. And then when you're done with, when you've gotten their diploma, there's not a job. And so there's just been a lot of scandal in some of the online education places because they can't actually follow through on the promises they seem to imply for their vocation afterwards. Now, I used to work at Lane Community College up in Eugene, Oregon, mm-hmm. and I started working there in the middle of the recession, 1982. And our slogan at Lane Community College was, we're part of the solution. So when you have a recession and you need job re-education to go into a new field, a community college is an absolutely great place to do it. They're able to put people in jobs immediately. I took a class on federal taxation out at PVCC this fall,
mm-hmm.
And in my class were three or four different UVA graduates who had graduated in majors that actually didn't supply them a job, who were learning taxation in order to do taxes for people. So, it's possible to actually get a vocational training that's quite separate from your liberal arts training. And I want to say there's a value in both. One teaches you to think and learns how to write and speak. And the other teaches you vocational skills that help you get an employment. They're both valuable. But it's not necessarily true that federal loans will guarantee finding the right job for the employment we need. If you really wanted to do that, you would pay people to get very specific majors. And you would pay people to be in an industry. And you'd say, look, we're willing to fund your college education if you're going into, and then have a list, if you're going into electrical engineering, computer science. I mean, we have a problem right now. If we have more lawyers graduating, then we're going to have jobs for lawyers. Unless the federal government continues to make regulation and compliance.
Well, that's
so
what
complex,
I worry about.
Yeah,
they'll expand to fill the lawyers that are available.
You know, and I know one prestigious law school who accepted everyone who applied this year when they used to only accept, you know, one out of 10. Now they accepted, you know, everyone who applied because they could, and mm-hmm. because they didn't matter, and there was no skin off their teeth, and so it didn't really matter. So I think there is something to be said with education being able to further employment, because we can't afford manufacturing jobs. But there's also something to be said for it's not all education. It is very specific education. And if we really want to fund that, we will fund very specific vocational training, and we will fund it only if you go into this industry and you work in this field. And if we want to get into that level of controlling people's lives, then it will have a lot more benefit than if we just generally say, a degree from any university is enough to get you all of this money.
David Morata, very important conversation. I'm so glad that we had it today. Visit him online at moradaonmoney.com, where you can read about this subject and so many others. And thanks again for being with us today on The Shilling Show.
And for all you UVA grads who are graduating, I just want to say best luck in the job market. Your degree is from one of the best universities, and now you get to join the real world and see how it applies.
And I hear Barnes & Noble is looking for PhDs.
There you go.
Okay. All right, that's going to wrap up this edition of this hour of The Shilling Show. The next hour is straight ahead with Ken Boyd. Stay with us. We've got much more to come.